Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Dr. Guy Gumbo Talk with your host, Dr. Tanisha Guy, and her co-hosts, Steve J. and marriage and family therapist expert, Fatima. This show is not intended to be therapy, but the sole purpose is encourage dialogue across ages, gender, religious backgrounds, ethnicity, and sexual orientation. Feel free to join in the discussion. We want to hear what you think. And don't forget to tell friends about Dr. Guy Gumbo Talk.
Guys, this is Dr. Guy, and we're back for another episode of Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk. And so Fatima is not with us today, unfortunately, but as always, we have wonderful Steve. Hey, Steve.
Hey, the social scientist is present and accounted for. I can't wait to get into this topic today.
So we have a guest with us today who I have been trying to get on for a while, so I'm so excited that she was available this Sunday. But before I introduce her, today is June 21st, 2020, and it is Father's Day. So I want to wish all of the fathers a happy Father's Day, but because I am a daddy's girl to the heart, I want to wish the absolute best father on the planet, Michael Guy, a happy Father's Day. Love you so much. Know you're listening, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. So, now I am ready. I am ready to introduce our guest today. Again, I've literally been trying to get her on for a while. So, you guys, we have Dee Speaks on the show with us today. Hey, Dee.
Hey, what's happening?
You know what? It's been one of those days. I don't know if it's the weather, but, you know, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. I think I'm just a little tired from, you know, everything that we have going on around us. But despite that, we're going to make it a good day. I am so excited to have you on the show because you have written a book, and it's called The Relationship Playbook, a 21-day journal on dating, sex, and love. And so I just want to take this opportunity to talk about the book because I purchased the book, I think, on a Friday night, and I probably had it read, I'm sure, by the end of Saturday night. And so even though it's a journal, like, I literally read it straight through, just like, oh, so this is good. Let me write down this quote. And so I just want you to tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do.
All right. Well, hey, everybody. So I'm Diane Marion Eunice, and they do call me Dee Speaks. And so I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I've been in private practice for the past 9 years. The name of my business is Let's Talk Relationships, PLLC, and also under that is Relationship Counseling Services. And so Over the years, I've worked with over 300 couples. And so that's one of my specializations. I love all things relationships. And so have an opportunity every day to work with couples. And so I'm also a speaker. I do a lot of speaking engagements, and mostly I'm talking about relationships. And so that's why I wrote the book, Dr. Guy, because in working with couples, I kept finding this thread of similarity in the relationships, on how people are showing up in relationships and how people are communicating with each other. And I see a lot of attachment issues and people complaining about communication. Oh, they don't know how to communicate, or we don't know how to argue, or we're yelling and screaming. So there's a lot of dynamics in couples that I've seen over the years. And so I just thought that I would put it all in a book. And that's how I came up with the relationship playbook.
Well, in the book, there are several sections that you really challenge people to take a look at themselves. Like, I think it was day 9. It's on the tip of my tongue. But I love words of affirmation, right? Like, that's definitely one of my love languages. And so throughout your book, you have all these different quotes that just stand out, and they're just so powerful. Some of them are by you. Some of them are by some other people. But on day 9, this is one of the ones that I had highlighted after I read it, and it says, "Your relationship with yourself sets the tone for every other relationship you will ever have." And I highlighted that one because it just really stood out to me, because it requires people to take ownership. Like, when I read it, that's what I heard. So tell me about that particular quote. What made you choose that as you started off day 9?
I think because when I started that chapter, I was talking about a reality show where people, they don't know each other, but I think they get married. And I can't remember the name of the show, but, you know, they're getting married. Married at First Sight. They get married to these complete strangers. And my thing when I was writing this was, you are marrying a complete stranger, and you don't even have a clue about yourself. And I noticed it in a lot of the couples. They individually, you just didn't know who you were. And so it's natural for us to really want to connect with somebody. That's a natural thing for some people. But it's challenging when we are disconnected from ourselves. And so when I wrote this chapter, it's because when I'm working with singles, it's interesting. I will ask this question, you know, tell me who you are. And you'd be surprised with that question that people, they just kind of look up at the ceiling, or, you know, they stumble when they're talking about it. And I've noticed that people just don't have a clear idea. Some people, not all, the ones that I worked with before just didn't have a clear idea of who they were. So when I ask, hey, tell me who you are, and they'll start telling me what they do. They don't tell me who they are, they'll tell me what they do.
And maybe that's one of the reasons why that particular quote stood out for me, because that's probably the first writing assignment that I ask clients to do, is to come back with something written about who am I. And you're so right. People give me what they do for a living, or they'll give me, oh, I'm a mother, I'm a father. And I'm like,
yeah.
Is that it? That's all you got? And so maybe that's why that quote kind of stood out to me, because I don't think sometimes we do that. We know who we really are. Like, I think we kind of know who we think we want to be, but that doesn't always add up to true self.
Absolutely.
And that's where the struggle comes in.
Go ahead, Dee. Well, I was thinking, before we can even operate in the we capacity, we really have to learn how to function in the I capacity. And you know, and that's one of the themes of this whole book, really, is to kind of do what I call like a soul excavation and just kind of getting down to the nitty-gritty, examining some of our belief systems, some of this baggage that we're carrying in to the relationship. And so when you ask, you know, so they'll tell me, hey, I want to be with somebody. Like, I want to connect with somebody. And then I'll ask them, well, tell me what you're looking for in a partner. And this is what I get. Silence.
Right. Silence.
Well, I want them to, they'll describe external qualities and what they want, you know, on a partner, but not what they want in a partner. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, I wanted to jump in real quick if I could. One of the things that I noticed when I started to date non-Western women was they had a better concept of the things that you're talking about, Dee. I think it's a really American view of how we look at ourselves is what we do. You know, our jobs define us, and, you know, we need to do a little bit more work than what I've seen over my years of dating.
So can you talk a little more on that about, so you said non-Western women, you noticed, are you saying they are a little more highly evolved in their
They're
sense of self?
They're more cognizant of who they are outside of their jobs. And that could be, you know, European women, women who may be from South America that I've run across. But it tends to be more of an American thing. You know, even men as well, you ask them, you know, who they are, and they tell you what they do. You know, we are so defined by our jobs and our income that, you know, we don't develop things that come into play in a successful relationship until later. We were so concerned about the outward appearance as well as the just the functionality from that standpoint, which to me is largely American.
I'm going to tend to agree with especially the aspect about being concerned about things and on the outside. You know, one of the things I talk about, especially in the book, I was talking about how we're walking around, you know, we're looking good on the outside. I'm telling you, we got on our Louis or our Prada, you know, we wearing Givenchy, whatever. We have that you know, those things on the outside, but on the inside, you know, I was thinking, Steve, how that's where the real work comes. You know, because at the end of the day, when those things come off, you're still you. Like, you're still there, and you haven't done any work. And so I just think it's interesting how you were saying it's a difference in the culture.
Right. You know, Dr. Guy and I have spoken in the past about there's an exploration phase that some of us go through and some of us don't, dating-wise. And you know, you have some concepts of who you think you would date or who you're compatible with, but a lot of times you're not. But you only know that if you get those experiences. Like, you think you may want to date a professional athlete until you're around that circle and see some of the things that goes on there. But that might be an aspiration that you have until it's something you're exposed to. You think you may want to date somebody who models and does, you know, some other things. But, you know, when you're exposed to their schedule and, you know, they're naked around a lot of other people, not necessarily other than being women, you know, it really tests some of your ideas about what you thought something was versus what it actually is.
See, I have a question.
Okay. No, go ahead. I can answer that
after you respond. Well, I was just going to say, we date, you know, and I say this all the time, we connect or date at the level of our self-esteem, too. So who we're attracting into our lives, I mean, on some level, it's resonating on how we feel about ourselves, too.
Now, that's a good point. So the question that I was going to ask you, I'm going to come back to that, because what you just said, I think we need to just unpack that statement. That, because, Steve, you and I have this conversation all the time about people dating on their level, right?
Right, a lot.
A couple of months ago, we did the show about the octane levels.
Correct.
And before Steve had even brought up the different octane levels of how men rate women, like octane levels of gas, I was like, what are you talking about, Steve, that people date at their level of confidence or lack of for that particular matter? And so what I guess I'm hearing you say is that you're agreeing. So if I, let's say, don't have very much self-worth, my level of dating is going to reflect that, or the person who I date is going to reflect that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what I'm hearing? So that totally makes sense, right? So what happens when you get, because this is kind of the flip side of what I think I see in sessions, is what happens when you get one who, for example, C says that it may be a cultural thing that we measure our self-worth by the jobs that we have or how much money we make here in the States. So with that being said, what happens when we encounter, in particular, I'm going to use women because that seems to be my season of clients in my practice now. So what happens when you have these very successful women in their careers and they're doing well and they make good money, but in their personal lives, it doesn't reflect that. Like, they're not dating the way they're not excelling in their romantic lives the way they are in their professional careers. And so they can tell you that they have all the confidence in the world, right? But when they date, they don't seem to match up. And I'm not sure if I'm explaining this well.
You are. Say the neck up? Did you say the neck up?
No, I'm saying like they don't. No, I'm saying I don't know if I'm explaining this well. That in their careers, they exemplify this high level of self worth and confidence, but in their personal lives, it doesn't seem to match up.
Well, I mean, I would think, and I've seen that too, Dr. Guy. On the outside, they really have it going on. They're in control of a lot of things. They're in charge of people. You know, they have by all intents and purposes, you know, the best job and the most wonderful life. And then when we get them in our office, we find that really they're broken, and there's a lot of unresolved, unhealed stuff that they have either, well, I'm going to say they've chosen not to address, because it's easy to do that. You get busy and you get into life and you get into all this. But at the end of the day, you know that there's some things going on intrinsically with you that is keeping you from living the best quality of life that you can. And so I see that quite a bit, that there's just some work that they haven't addressed, you know, and need to.
Well, I see it a little differently. what happens with a lot of your high-achieving women is they start trying to date like men.
They try to date what?
Like, date like men. Like they've lost their feminine. They present feminine, but you know they have the appearance. You know, they may know what to wear. They may know how to put on makeup, but mentally, like we talked about, you know, their presentation is inherently masculine. Like guys, a lot of times they'll be like, "Well, okay, well I know I can't date a certain type of woman until I you know, get to a certain point of success, whether it's, you know, financially, you know, power-wise, or whatever the case may be." And so what you'll see is those women who are in those positions, their behavior starts to mimic the men. But it doesn't work because men are inherently like women in that regard. Like, say, for instance, we're not drawn to that security as much as women are. So you'll find those women trying to date like men but having difficulty because what you're having is the men they're attracted to aren't attracted to them. And they feel like because they've gotten to that station in life, then they're entitled to the 6'5 guy who makes $500,000 a year, who looks like, you know, Shamar Moore. Like, that's her bottom thing that she's willing to accept. But, you know, she may not garner the same physical attributes that would find that gentleman. I think that is more what I see than anything else. It's people aren't realistic with what they're capable of maintaining and or attracting.
Hmm.
Okay. That came at the same time.
I gotta sit with that one.
I'm definitely sitting with that. So they want to date like men. I don't know how do you date like men.
Say for instance, with a man. And, you know, women, you all will mimic this as well. I mean, parrot this as well. You feel like a man shouldn't be dating until he's at a certain place economically, you know, spiritually, all those things. So in a man's mind, you've seen it a lot of times. What's that?
You said that we think that men should be at a certain, like, station in life before they should be dating?
Yeah, I should be able to take you out to eat before I'm dating you. I should not ask you for gas money to come to your house to come see you.
Okay, well, I don't think all women share that, but okay.
Well, I'm never going to say anything is all. I'm just saying generally speaking.
Okay.
So
I didn't hear you say the generally part though, but
well, I mean I'm sorry, I didn't say it. It's generally implied. I apologize.
Oh, okay.
So what you will find is now that women have reached a certain place economically in their position and power, now they go back to the fairy tale that they deserve their prince. But their prince has to be and look exactly like what they want because they feel like they're entitled to it because they have done the work to get to the position or station in life. So what happens is their prince comes along, but he may not be tall as he may not be physically as fit. He may not be financially or mentally as astute, but in their mind, that's not their prince because their prince behaves and acts in the way that they created it in their mind. Like for men, when they reach a certain level, they go and get the woman. Well, some of them, let me say that
uh-huh.
may physically have that appearance. You know, you've seen men out with women, and they were, let's say, might have been facially challenged. Or you've seen men with women and wonder, well, what do they have in common? So that's what I'm saying. Now that women are in that lane, they're trying to date like those men, but it doesn't work.
Huh. So, Dr. Guy, I'm going to just wait for your comment on that one.
You know, oh my goodness. So, I have to say I'm on the fence. Only because I agree with some of what Caesar said, but then I disagree with another portion. Because I do think that I don't think that it's a problem for women to date like men. I don't think that that's the problem. I disagree with that part. But I do think that there are instances where women have a ideal image of what their man should be like because that's what they think he should be. And so they're looking for what they want. But that may not necessarily be the best man for her.
Right.
They're looking for their want and not what they need.
Yeah, right. Like you said, Steve, she might want the corporate man who makes, you know, over 500 grand and he's successful and he's handsome. Yeah, you might want him. You might say you want him. But in order for him to have those things, he might be a workaholic, right? Like, maybe he doesn't give you any time because he's busy climbing the corporate ladder so that he can continue to excel in his career. So to say that you want him, you might think you want him, but if you got him, is that really what you need, right? Like, do you want a man who technically is never there because he's always at work? And so I wonder if women get stuck in that respect as they're dating or as they're trying to date. Is that something that you see in your practice?
I do. And another thing, but what's interesting about really successful women or the ones that I have worked with is that they really want to come home and drop that cape and want to be they don't want to have to make decisions. They don't want to have to be that strong person. They want somebody at home who's going to take the lead, somebody who's going to, pretty much just take the lead. So I'm kind of, and Steve, I'm processing what you were saying, and I do agree with it on certain levels. I absolutely do. But I think, like Dr. Guy said, I think there's some other dynamics involved in this too.
Well, definitely. I mean, you know, I've dated those women that you speak of, and what I'm saying is it is difficult for them, and for lack of a better way to say it, for them to sit their ass down. Like, it's just not inherently something that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
They can tell you that, oh, I would like to come home and sit down, but because of how they're wired from work, it's not a smooth transition. It needs to be how it needs to be. And there can be some disconnect between how you're treated in a relationship versus
mm-hmm.
how they may treat their quote-unquote employees. So they can come in your office and tell you those things, but I'm just telling you what I have seen and, you know, what is the barbershop talk.
Right. I just think, too, it goes back to some family of origin stuff from the ones that I work with. Being strong was the only thing that they knew to be. Being strong was all that they saw that their mom had to be. And so, you know, and even growing up, it was instilled in them that, you know, have your own and don't depend on a man for anything. You know, and so some of the women that I've worked with had some of those messages that, you know, I don't need a man. You know, I want a man. And when you go into a relationship with that type of mentality, it's really kind of hard when I'm working with couples who are both alphas, where neither one is willing to give in. It can be a very difficult relationship because I was raised, and some of these women too, they had to be heads of the household because they didn't have their father around. And so they said that their mom would leave them and they would have to be over the house. They would have to be taking care of everything. They'd have to take care of their siblings. Then they would have to have a job. So I think there are so many factors that go into women who have such strong personalities that is definitely worth consideration. Because they're strong because that's all they've ever known and that's all they've had to be growing up. So
definitely.
Steve, some of them want.
Well, I guess what, you know, I definitely agree, but, you know, I guess it just goes back to, you know, how do you correct, you know, the behavior to create that successful relationship. So I'm definitely not saying that these people haven't arrived at their places in life or their conclusions righteously, but just, you know, from the male space, it's a whole lot easier just to deal with someone who is a little bit more submissive and feminine, that's all.
Okay. Did you say and feminine?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, having a knowledge of what feminine is versus, you know, me having to, you know, as I say, you know, mind wrestle with you, you know, go through whatever process this needs to be. You know, and it's the same thing we talk about, you know, with men and women. Like, men don't want to have to go out in the world and deal with the things they go to and come back and have to wrestle a dragon at the house. You know, that's
absolutely
why I used to see, you know, in the 60s and 70s, that's why men would go for a drink afterwards. Or, you know, they had to go someplace before they had to go home because they had to get ready mentally for, you know, those things. So, I mean, I think there are places for, you know, all of those things. So I'm kind of interested. We kind of touched on this. So is there a space in there that you kind of talk about, you know, maybe a birth order or, you know, some of those characteristics where people might have picked up, like you said, the
yeah.
young lady who might be in charge of her siblings and who
right.
she would need to find in order to be compatible with?
Yeah. So in my chapter one, it was kind of looking at, you know, having people kind of, I was really talking about some of the characteristics of their family of origin. And so after this chapter, my questions that I asked on day two, it really did touch on some of those things that it asked questions like, what did you see? How was love expressed? How did you know you were loved? How were emotions shown in the family? And then I asked about what was your role in the family, because your role in the family is really, really important. Whether it was ascribed to you or as a child, you saw that you put yourself in that role. So I did ask, you know, about that. And one, of course, you know, is the invisible child, and then the responsible child, and the rebel child, and the joker child. So these ladies that we're talking about would really fit into the responsible child, because they're the ones who, you know, they were the family caretaker or people, you know, the family was proud of this person and they didn't want to make any mistakes. They were self-sufficient and they had, it seemed like they had it all together, and they were always the reliable one and they pretended everything is okay. So think about the women who are in these successful roles, and this is one of the roles that they played in their family of origin that just transferred over into their adulthood. So that's why I was saying some of them have this, of course, at work, they're able to run big teams and oversee large budgets or whatever, because if you think about it, they had those type of roles in the family of making sure everything ran smoothly. But the key word is that responsible child, the key word is pretending that everything was okay, because they couldn't allow themselves to be seen like some of the other children in, you know, if there were other siblings, they had to be seen as this person. They wanted the family to look at them and be like, oh, I'm so proud of her. She doesn't give us any trouble. She's always getting good grades. She got Beta Club. I mean, you know, that's that child. But the key word, like I said, is pretending. So even though they're at work, and I think even at work, they can be pretending on some level too, because they
Absolutely.
Never had an opportunity to be like the other kids and play or cry, or they didn't want to seem weak. And so it's kind of hard when you're growing up in that particular role, and then when you become an adult, still trying to hold it all together for other people. And then you resort to wearing these masks.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with what you're saying. It looks like we do have a caller. So we're going to go to the phone lines, and then I'm going to pick back up with another question. If you guys are just tuning in today, we're talking about the relationship playbook with DC, and we're just going to go to the phone line to take a quick call. 214. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello. Hi there.
Here? Hello.
Yeah, I just kind of got on that alpha chick conversation. And I'm just wondering, so what?
Is this Mr.
I couldn't
Rutledge?
Quite hear that.
Is this Mr. Rutledge?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Hello, and happy Father's Day.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Now you can continue.
Okay. So I was wondering, what's wrong with the alpha chick? Because I grew up, my mother's an alpha chick. Her mother's an alpha chick. My paternal grandmother was an alpha chick. My wife and daughter are alpha chicks. And I personally never found it an issue. As a matter of fact, that was always challenging me to be a better man. Always challenged me to go a little higher or dig a little deeper in myself to navigate that personality type. So I'm just thinking, why is there a problem with it? Because it's made me a better man, Ethan.
I want to question for Steve.
Well, can I just tell him that there is absolutely, there's nothing wrong with an alpha woman. So I wanted to clear that up. There's nothing absolutely, because some alpha women, like I said, that's what they had to be.
Right.
And so, but I'm curious, are you an alpha male?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
That's where I see some problems sometimes when I'm working with couples. When they're two alphas is when I see the most issues happening.
But to see, Dr.
God, being an alpha male doesn't mean I'm alpha like an alpha lion and ruthless. But what that does mean in my alpha is that I am a leader, and if I am to lead well, then I have to know who I'm leading and understand who I'm leading and understand what it takes to cultivate her personality and bring the best out of her alpha to match my alpha. Like, her crazy matches my crazy.
Okay. But you said
that
something about leading. It makes sense, but my response is, that was DC before, but I would agree. I don't think there's anything wrong with alpha women. I think that it complicates some relationships when there are two alphas and both alphas want to lead. That seems to be the problem. Not that there's a problem with her being an alpha, but there's a problem when you can't have two people leading at the same time. I think that's when the conflict occurs, because she doesn't want to back down, he doesn't want to back down, so now what do we do? I think it creates conflict. At least that's what it seems to appear like in my session.
Okay. Well, I have worked with a few alpha couples myself, and I always give the challenge of, so who is alpha enough to realize that someone has to take a step back? Who's going to be courageous enough to be courageous?
Exactly.
Well,
but that doesn't happen, though. That's a great question.
I wanted to jump in real quick.
Jump on.
What we were talking about was the women that Dee was running across that were having problems attracting men. Now, for your situation, I'm never going to tell you you're not alpha, brother, because I don't know you. And it seems like is a nice, healthy balance with your partner. Like,
Right.
What we talk about in these situations is somebody got to drive. There ain't but one steering wheel in the car. Now, whenever you driving, as long as she recognizes that and lets you do your thing, and as long as when she driving, you understand that, for your relationship, you got a good balance. And I'm happy for you. But for other individuals who I run across, like myself, like, I'm not stepping back. You know, to me, that's not me being alpha. That's me being submissive. So you know, I'm going to lead, and you're going to follow. I may not lead on everything, but I'm going to lead on most things. The things that we've identified that I need to lead on, I'll do that. The things we need you to lead on because you're better than those things than I am, we'll do that. But when it comes to leadership,
we're saying the same thing.
So there's that hierarchy you're saying.
Right.
There's a hierarchy.
Like, what I was saying is for your situation, figure that out. But for us in the dating world, it's pretty much So consider yourself lucky in that regard. Like, say, for instance, I don't know how you get along with, because I've never got along with, my mother's alpha, and we are terrible, you know. You know.
I never had that. Yeah.
Right. It depends on what it looks like, you know, what is done in a relationship. Is there their respect or disrespect? There are a lot of things and nuances to go into it. So, like I said, I'm happy for you in your situation, you know, for the, you know, as I term them, the wild wildebeest and hyena, you know, out in the dating world, you know, man, consider yourself lucky.
I just want to say this, and what you were saying about I'm going to lead it, and that's it. I don't know, man. Sounded a little colonizer to me.
Wow.
It can sound, sound God's name. It sound King Kong. I don't really care how it sounds to you.
Huh?
I said it can sound colonizer. It can sound King Kong. It can sound however it want to sound to you. I don't really bother me.
No, I'm just saying. I'm not down. I'm saying look, kind of look like a little colonizer. That's all, you know.
And I'm telling you, what is all.
So, Steve, do you mostly date women who are? So you don't date alpha women at all.
I date everything.
Huh?
I date everything.
Okay, you just don't seem to. You don't tend to do well with alpha women, is what you're saying.
Oh, it's not gonna work. After a while. We'll run it, but eventually it's going to come to a point where, you know, one of us going to quit.
Yeah. I think as long as the couple, if you're going to be with an alpha male and an alpha woman, I think if they decide very early on what the leadership in that relationship is going to look like, I think they have a high chance of this thing working out. The alpha male and women that I see as a couple in my office, it seems like a competition. Like, I have never seen anything like it. Sometimes I will just sit back in my chair and just look at them because they don't agree on, like, they don't agree on anything. And I'm like, are you guys even in the same relationship? Like, everything is a competition. Everything is a competition. If he says it's blue, she says it's green. It is the most relationship I have ever seen. And it's not even about being submissive. You know, I consider myself alpha woman, but I have no problem when it comes to submission and certain things. And I think some alpha women really, really getting, you know, get upset about that word. But I think people just don't understand what that word really means. It doesn't mean that you're taking a back seat to everything. It just means that some things you're going to have to submit to and, you know, allow your partner to take the lead in that area. That also means there's going to be some things that he may have to submit to. But I think once I've... What was that, Steve?
Oh, that was not
Mr. Weller was just green. Mr. Weller was a green.
Yes, yes, I was green.
Oh. What were you saying?
No, I was just amening. I was like, yes, indeed.
Yeah, I just think we get caught up. I've never just seen it's like a competition on everything. And it's just interesting. And my question to them is, so what really attracted you guys together? Like, you know, what was it?
Well, I can
jump in on
that.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, the guy would be like, well, because she was so independent and she had, you know, her own mind. But okay, but then when you get with her and marry her, now that seems to be a problem for you.
Right. She's just not supposed to use it with him.
Well,
right.
What I've run across,
she's
is you to tell them, but they don't believe you.
Hmm.
What did
they
you say, Steve?
You
I couldn't hear you.
They want to tell them, but they don't believe you, and they want to test your alpha. Well, you can't be that alpha, or you can't do this. So what they get into is playing those reindeer games, and then you end up someplace that you shouldn't have ended up at because you didn't believe me when I told you.
You know what? I would say based on personal experience and then just based on working with couples, that I agree with D that in a session when it's two alphas, I'm confused because I'm like, how are you all even together? Because they're arguing about everything, the smallest little thing.
Everything.
But I think if you ask any alpha female, right, and I'm speaking as an alpha female, if you ask her if she likes being an alpha, right, versus I do it out of necessity, you will probably get, I do it out of necessity. Because if I don't do this, no one else is going to do these things. So I do it. I take care of whatever I need to take care of. But if you asked her, if you had an opportunity to not have to be the alpha, would you want to? And that's the question I don't think men ask, right? Like, I don't even think it comes to their mind. And I'm not saying using those specific words. But if you ask a woman, hey, would you choose to be an alpha? In most cases, she would probably say no. Like, I don't want to have to do this. I would love not to have to do this. But this is what I have to do because ain't nobody else doing it for me, right? But
right.
If she was with a man, and this is, Steve, this is what I think comes up, at least, again, this is from personal, right, and anecdotal experience with clients. What I think comes up for the alpha female, when she continues to remain in her alpha, or what you call, Steve, her masculine role, it is because she does not trust the man that she's with, that she does not
Absolutely.
Trust his ability to lead her. So she chooses
yeah.
to stay in alpha mode. Now, if she trusts
yeah.
him, then she's willing,
yeah.
and it's not to call her anything other than who she is, but she's willing to yeah. say, I don't have to lead today. Because I trust that you got it. Now, that doesn't mean that she's still not an alpha. It just means I don't have to do this today. I don't have to drive. I don't have to be behind the steering wheel. I'm okay
right.
with being in the passenger
yeah.
seat, closing my eyes, and going to sleep because you got this. But when women, when you don't
right.
see that with women and men, and they're fighting because it's two alphas, I truly believe it comes down to she does not trust him and his ability to lead. I don't care how much of an alpha he calls
him. I like
I agree.
I agree.
I agree.
Like
that, guys,
yeah.
I think it's in the proof. And the proof is in the living. If you live with a woman, whether she's alpha or not, but if you prove to her that you are not willing or capable to create an atmosphere where she can afford not to alpha, then I agree that the guy that she will probably not be. But unless this man proves to her with the way that he lives with her that she can indeed trust him, even with her alpha-ness, then he's going to always run up against it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I agree to an extent, but it really comes down to one word. No. When I say no, how does she respond? Yeah, no. Some y'all don't like to hear.
No. Absolutely not. No.
Right.
Not.
So it's okay. Let me get down real quick. It's okay for me to lead you when everything's going good and I'm saying yes. But when I have to tell you no, that's when I know how much you respect and trust me.
But let me tell you something. And then I'm going to go to the call line because we got another caller. I am probably, and this is personal. This ain't got nothing to do with nobody else. This is all tea stuff right here. No, it's something that I will admit I don't like hearing. And I will go back to what I said at the top of the show. Happy Father's Day to the best father on the planet, Michael God. Thank you for creating this beast over here. Him and him. I'm going to get it all down. So I don't think no was necessarily in the vocabulary often. I'm going to say often, but it was in the vocabulary when it needed to be, and I had to deal with that. But I did grow up thinking that no just wasn't a part of my understanding, right? And so I did the things necessary for me not to hear no. Now, in relationships, Steve, I will say that in my early years, no was not an option. But since I am seasoned now, a whole lot more seasoned, I understand that sometimes I understand that I don't always know what is best for me. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just want what I want because I want it. Mm-hmm. But that may not be necessary. It may not be what I necessarily need for myself. Right? And so sometimes I'm okay with someone telling me no because the no is coming mm-hmm. from a place of care and not just I'm going to say no for saying no. So that's my own personal response to women who don't like hearing no, Steve, who are alpha women. But I gotta get to this caller. So, Mr. Rutledge, continue to stay there, and thank you for joining in and giving us your comments.
Thank you.
Caller, you're on the air at 618.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Hadi.
Hey, Hadi.
Hadi from the DMV.
So I had to chime in because I am an alpha female as well. And I'm also a firstborn, so I'm that responsible one as well. So I played the role of leadership pretty much all my life. And mm-hmm. I am now in a relationship with someone who is also an alpha male, and I am learning to step back.
Mm.
And that is
something
new for me.
So you're an alpha sub. You're an alpha sub.
I'm sorry?
I said you're like me. You're an alpha sub.
Mm-hmm. So I'm learning to step back in this relationship and allowing him to lead, which is true. That means that I trust him. Because if I didn't trust him, we wouldn't be together. Because it would be a competition. Yeah. It would be me saying to him, I ain't trying to hear that. I've had to learn how to say, okay, he is the man in this relationship. I need to let this go. Which is a struggle for me because that's something that I've been constantly been told. And sometimes you just need to let go and allow someone else to take lead. And for a person who's always been in leadership, I'm a director, I'm running this, I'm quality assurance director, I've consistently in my whole life been in charge. And for the first time at the age of 40-plus, I am in this relationship saying that I'm not in charge.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Exactly
so
what we
it
were
does
just talking
take,
about.
It does, I will say, it takes maturity. Because if, yeah, like Tanisha, Dr. Guy said, if you would have asked me these questions probably 10, 15 years ago, there would be no way. I didn't like the word no. This person tells me no a little bit too much sometimes, and I just look at them a little crazy. But I'm learning that, okay, if I want this relationship to work, I'm going to have to learn and allow him to lead. And I also think Happy Father's Day to all the fathers. I lost my father 3 years ago, and I think that may be another reason why I'm more willing to allow someone else to lead because I'm a daddy's girl. So if a man just didn't do what I felt like he needed to be doing, I always had daddy.
Absolutely.
But as a woman who's lost her father, I feel like, okay, maybe I should give this man a try and allow him to lead. And you write, someone said, you know, to not have to do certain things, to not have to take care of certain things, I would have to say this person will be like, I got this. And I'd be like, okay. And I'm not really used to that because typically I've had to be the one to do it. If I needed to get it done, I had to do it. But now it's like, no, I got this. Hadi, I got this. So it's interesting dating an alpha and being an alpha female and learning to actually step back to make a relationship work. And it cannot be about, it has to be about compromising and understanding and not competition.
Right. It's called growth.
Right, definitely. It's
growth and evolution for sure to get to that space because not many alpha women can let go of the reins.
Yeah.
What would you, and Dee, this is for you too, and Heidi, what would you all say to alpha women? Because Steve repeatedly says this, and obviously other men have made mention to this too. When I did the research study several years ago, men consistently across the board said they just wanted to be needed. So if there's someone who's listening and she's an alpha woman and she's either not in a relationship or struggling in a relationship, and it's maybe possibly due to the fact that she continues to assert her alphaness, what would you all say to that woman listening about being okay with not having to lead?
I would say allow him to. The only way you're going to know if this is the person you're supposed to be with is really allowing him. I mean, alpha women particularly tend to feel like, well, I'm just so used to doing it, I'll get it done myself. So in this relationship, it was the little things, like him coming over and putting a bookshelf up. I know I can put a bookshelf up. I know how to get my oil changed. I know how to get things done. But allowing him to do it makes him feel, he does feel like she allows me to take care of things. And I believe he knows that I can take care of them. But when I say, hey, babe, something's going on with my car, he comes over immediately and he checks it out and he'd be like, okay, I can't fix this, but I got a mechanic to take care that can take care of it. I think that's something we need to allow our men to do. Is instead of us always saying that we got it, we could do this, just allow them to do it. Some of those things they really feel appreciated when you do it for when you allow them to do it.
Thanks,
and you don't have to be in control of everything.
Everything, exactly. You don't have to
keep the cape on all the time.
Right.
You know, one of the things that's beautiful about being in a relationship is being able to share some of those burdens. And when you're in that relationship with somebody that, Dr. Guy, you said it's a trust thing.
Mm-hmm.
Alpha women just aren't that trusting. They're not that as trusting if they, you know, if they allow themselves to be vulnerable with someone, if they allow themselves to, you know, open up to someone, that's very hard for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely hard for them to do because they have to know that they have that trust. They have to know that they can depend on you. But they're also very interesting because the minute you do something that and you let them down, oh, Lord. The minute you let them down something, it's a tragedy almost because it's like, that's why I have to do everything because I can't trust you to do X, Y, Z or whatever. And I've heard that over and over again. You let me down, you let me down. And so that's what
I think those two, there were two things that you said, two words, and I think those go hand in hand, and they're some of the reasons why either men or women struggle in moving their relationships forward, and one is trust, and then the second one is the ability to be vulnerable. And because of those two things, it's so scary to say, I'm going to trust you. But if I trust you, then it puts me in a vulnerable place and I'm left exposed, which means now you can hurt me. And so I think whether you're a male or a female, that comfort zone says, I need to go ahead and protect myself. So protecting myself looks like this. And that keeps them both in their alpha mode, which keeps them bumping heads and at odds with each other instead of really seeing that the relationship can grow because I'm trusting you, but because I'm trusting you, I'm allowing myself to be vulnerable with you. And that's a scary place to be.
Right.
But men, but you have to allow them to be a man.
You have to
allow them to know that they are needed on some level. Because an alpha woman can give off this persona like she doesn't need anybody. I don't need your help. I don't need you in my life. I heard this before. I don't need a man. I want one. You're in my life because I want you to be, not because I need you to be. And if you think of how that really sounds, that doesn't sound good.
Right.
For a man to hear that you don't really need me, you know, what am I here for? What's my purpose in the relationship? What's my role?
Steve, I know you don't represent all men by no means, but because you are the only male now on the call list, I got to ask you this question, what Steve just said.
Are we in the
So the question that Deej, the statement that Deej just made, we know comes up quite often that women will often say, I don't need a man. I want him, but I don't need him. As a man, hearing that, because Deej just mentioned it, what does that sound like? And is it received differently for you if a woman says, yes, I need you, versus a woman saying, no, I don't need you, but I want you? Like, does it still have the same effect?
Oh, I mean, I think definitely, you know, you and I talked about this, I don't know, years ago, even if we just go to speaking things in existence, and how do you verbally set yourself up for your blessings, your curses? So, you know, when you start speaking about what you don't need and what you don't want, then you're not going to attract it because your behavior is going to be indicative of that, those words that you're using. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I want to take you out to dinner, or, you know, you can eat if you want to. Like, so, those two phrases resonate quite differently. Talking about us going out on a date, like, you know, hey, I'd like to take you out to eat, or, hey, I'm going to eat. You can come if you want to. So,
those are different.
So, you know, those are the narratives that, you know, women use. I'm not going to use any specific groups, but, you know, women tend to use that because that's what's been passed on to them for, you know, their self-protection.
Right.
You know, I don't care who you are, how many pillows you got in the bed. You can't hold yourself at night. You know, so, you know, we know what it is from a male standpoint. You know, it's just how we tend to categorize or look at the women who say these things. You know, are you coming from a place of you just been hurting, you're vulnerable, or, like I said, are you just running with the wildebeest hyena pack and you just, you know, wild to the night?
Okay. Interesting.
That is interesting.
I definitely agree with that, it has a different connotation to it, so I'm sure it's received differently. There was a conversation I had, and Dee, maybe you can respond to this, conversation I had with a young lady this past weekend. And she's in her late 20s, and she has several questions about how she can improve her relationship. And she's currently dating a guy who she describes as a great guy, but he's emotionally detached. Like, his mother admits that she was raising sons, and so she taught them not to really deal with their emotions and to not show affection. And so here you have this adult man who doesn't present with a lot of affection at all, and that's just kind of how he was raised. So she's wondering how – what does she do with that? because he will say, I just wasn't raised that way.
So my answer is, it's not what she needs to do with that. It's what he needs to do with that, because that's baggage he's bringing into the relationship. And even though we come through our parents, who we ultimately become in our relationships is up to us. So he still is 100% responsible for, you know, when people, that's kind of like somebody saying, well, that's just how I am. You know, and when I hear people say, that's just how I am, and everybody knows this is how I am, and I've been like this since, you know, to me it's just an excuse for you not to change. You know, if you're in a relationship, you know you can't be physically present and emotionally absent. It just won't work. So that's something that he can't keep relying on as a grown man, that, well, we weren't raised to show emotions, or we weren't. Now that it's time for you to talk to somebody to help you try to work through that. But you can't just sit on your laurels and be like, well, it's, you know, it's just who I am. And she is absolutely not her responsibility to deal with that baggage. And, you know, she can be there emotionally to support him as he works through and try to figure out, you know, how to unpack that baggage himself. But for her to sit and be thinking, well, how can I change this situation, or what can I do to be different? No. Steve may have a different perspective on that.
Oh, 100%. You know. So
let's go.
Being that I am very cerebral and lack as much emotion as probably expressing here, I think one of the things that Dr. Gowie's teases me about is I grew up around reptiles and not mammals, so we tend to be a little more cold-blooded to each other. It may not necessarily be a him thing as much as it's a her thing. Like, he may express himself is just in ways she hadn't picked up. Like, say, for instance, I've dated Asian women, and they're not necessarily, as a group, very expressive, but you can pick up on some of their mannerisms. So it may be that she's expecting him to be a mammal and he's a reptile. So she may need to be a little bit more cognizant on some of his nuances and mannerisms that are things that are cues to him being a little bit more emotional. It just doesn't represent or present itself like what she's accustomed to.
That doesn't sound like any level of growth on his part.
None. I mean,
that
absolutely.
Sounds like all her.
Right. And
I didn't say that it wasn't.
it kind of sounded like he has no, you know, well, this is just, you know, maybe she's not picking up on cues, or no. It, you know, love is hard. You know, when you're in a relationship. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Like I said, I'm not, you know, that particular client, and all I can do is express the things that I've gone through in terms of, you know, me being expressive. You know, I may be a little bit more communicative, but, you know, some stuff it's just not in me. Because I'm a certain point, you have to look at what and the person is, what animal you're dealing with, and realize, I mean, if it's a cheetah, it ain't a lion. Like, it just runs fast. It don't have a mane. So, you know, and I think that what we kind of get into sometimes with women is getting into fixing people. And a lot of times, these people are not broken. That's just who they are. And
you know what?
Expecting him to be who he isn't is why she's in your office and he ain't.
When you're in a relationship, I mean, one part of it is when you're in a relationship, it's about seeking the best and highest for the other person. And so if she's expressing to him, hey, I'm really not getting my needs met in terms of your being connected with you emotionally, I don't even know the situation, I'm just saying, then it's not his job to tell her, well, okay, this is just who I am. So either you deal with it or, you know, that's not how this works. He still has some responsibility. And if she doesn't like it, she doesn't have to, you know, if it bothers her, she doesn't have to deal with that. But I'm just saying he can't just say, well, you know, this is just who I am. It just doesn't work like that, period.
In that scenario, I agree with you. But what I'm saying is a highly cerebral male who is overdeveloped thinking-wise and probably underdeveloped feeling-wise, when I have been presented with these scenarios and situations, it's not that. What I have gotten is people want me to be as emotional as they are, and I'm not. Like, I'm not drawn into the news like you are. Like, I don't have those same feelings. So that's what I'm more speaking to. Like, I'm more logic-driven. So when I saw the young man in Atlanta get shot, it didn't have the same effect on me that it had on other people. So that's more what I'm speaking to than the scenario that you gave initially. Like, there's some part of him that's just at a certain degree. Now, if she's not getting what she wants, she may be looking from the wrong angle, or she may be looking to the wrong person.
Let me see. I think, Ivy, are you still there?
Yeah.
Ivy, what are your thoughts on that scenario about the gentleman who is emotionally detached and says, this is just how I grew up? Steve just feels like maybe his girlfriend should just accept that. Dee and I are saying that maybe there's a part of growth on his part that he needs to undergo.
I believe it's a part of his growth. I've dealt with a lot of men who are emotionally detached, and a lot of that has a lot to do with the trauma or things that have happened in their past or the way that they've been raised. So I truly believe that that's the work on him. It means he needs to do some work. She can make a decision to stay in that situation. I've done that. I've learned that if they're not willing and wanting to get the work, it may not be a good place for you to stay, especially if you want a different type of relationship. So, but that is the work on him. That work needs to be done on his part. But he has to be wanting to have that work done.
Thanks, Heidi. So, Steve, I'm sure, you know, it could go either way. She could just accept him and understand that he – and I don't think her question, her issue was she wants him to be as emotionally connected as she is to everything, but she would like to see – some emotional responses from him. So I think there's a difference there. One of the things that might actually be helpful for him and her, Dee, is a copy of the relationship playbook. So as we prepare to wrap up, how can she get a copy of the book?
I have a link, and is it where I can it's not on Facebook. Right, you can't drop a link in here. Let me give it to you.
I can drop a link on my blog talk page. So if you can email it to me, then
I'll do that.
Perfect.
And tomorrow it's going to be on Amazon too, so people can get it there. I'll send you the link.
Oh, perfect. Well, then I can tell her to look for it on Amazon. So as we prepare to wrap up today, what would you like our listeners to, what would you like to leave them with this afternoon?
You're talking to me, right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. I think the thing that, you know, we say all the time, even on our radio show, and even, you know, our co-host Renee says, do the work. Before we go from a me to a we, you know, we really need to start examining ourselves and start working through some of this unresolved stuff, baggage that we're bringing into these relationships. Because, you know, in working with so many couples, we're moving around these relationships in some not so very healthy manners. We're you know, and sometimes we're showing up in relationships with this baggage and handing it over to the other person to do something with. But we're 100% responsible for what, how we operate within the relationship. And so, and the one thing about the book, it is helping people to just examine some of their belief systems, examine some of the roles that they played in the family. And I tell people, you know, we didn't come from perfect families. You know, we've done the best that we can with what we had. But like I said earlier, you know, even though we come from our families and our parents, who we become and who we show up as adults in our relationship is up to us. And we can't keep resorting back and looking in that rearview mirror and saying, well, that's how I grew up, or this is just who I am. That no longer flies, because you still have to do the work. You have to do the work.
Absolutely correct. Steve, what are your final thoughts?
Hey, man, I'm a little disappointed. I wish I could have got a copy of the playbook to peruse it. I wish we'd have touched on dating in the COVID environment a little bit. That's going to be something change dramatically. So I'm just telling everybody, hey, you know, get your mask on, just social distance until you can't stand it no more. Then go ahead and go for it and see what happens. Hopefully, don't come back with the COVID.
I know that was something I wanted us to get to today, and we didn't. So we'll probably have to bring that back, because you're right, Steve. Dating in COVID-19 times looks very different. People are going virtual dates. And so, you know, that may be something that people are going to have to do a little bit longer, is engage in these virtual dates for those people that are trying to remain, you know, safe. So we'll definitely bring that back on a later date. And so one of the things that I just want to leave everyone with is, if you're in a relationship, thinking about starting a relationship, but you're having some tough conversations or you don't know how to start the conversations, one of the reasons why I like the relationship playbook is because it's written as a journal. So it's a 21-day journal. You don't have to sit and read it in one night. It allows you to really sit and process some things and do some self-introspection. But there are some questions in there that you can ask your mate, and you guys can discuss those questions together. So if you just really don't know how to start the conversation, how to start the process of being healthier in your relationship, the relationship playbook is a really good place to start. With that being said, you guys, these continue to be unprecedented times that we are in right now. COVID-19, the virus has not gone away. I know every state has now opened up. We just recently got notification that some restaurants that were open in our area are now closing back down due to the number of COVID outbreak cases that they had in their restaurants. So you guys, please be safe. If you're going to have to go out, wear a mask, social distance, continue to do your best, because this virus is still here and it's still killing people. And so I definitely want to make sure, if you guys are out there protesting and doing what you feel like you are called to do, just do it in the safest way possible. And everyone, try to make sure that you are watching out for each other. There are some things that are taking place in these times, you guys, that I wouldn't believe that I would be seeing it in my lifetime. And so just be cautious. Look out for one another. And don't forget, you guys, to Facebook it, tweet it, pass it on. Tell a friend about Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk. Everyone have a blessed week, and we'll be back next Sunday. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Dr. Guy. Bye, Steve.
Steve, you're on your best behavior today. I'm so proud of you.
Is he still on here?
No, he got off.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll
good
see you.
Today.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. This was fun.
Thanks. I hope you come back on.
I am. I wanted him to bring some fire. He must have been tired today.
Don't worry, you'll be back. You'll get it.
All right, have a good night.
You too.